Good evening, and welcome to Decision 20... Mike, one.
Good evening, and welcome to Decision 2024, the Edge News special election broadcast for November 5th, 2024. I'm Patrick Kelly, and I'm with Claire McNamara and Nancy McInnes, coming to you live from the SUNY New Paltz campus. Up first, your Edge News brief, topping tonight's national headlines. You might be excited about Election Day, dreading it, or desperate for it to be over. Regardless, it is here. But the end of this high-drama presidential campaign on election night may not bring immediate clarity about who has won. The race itself is unlike any other, pitting former President Donald J. Trump, a man who has essentially been running for president for 9 years, against Vice President Kamala Harris, a woman who has been running for about 16 weeks. The contest, which began as a rare rematch between Mr. Trump and President Biden, was reset after a televised debate that ended Mr. Biden's bid for re-election and paved the way for Ms. Harris's midsummer ascendance. And it took a violent turn when two would-be assassins made separate attempts on Mr. Trump's life. More than 78 million people have already voted, and as we head into the final days of voting, polling suggests that two candidates who could not be more different, who fundamentally disagree on weighty matters of the economy, women's rights, and the very purpose of government, are locked in excruciatingly tight contests, with all seven battleground states still in play. It could take days, or even longer, to know who wins.
Also in national news, former President Donald J. Trump cast his ballot for himself in Palm Beach, Florida, on Tuesday, and said this would likely be his last campaign, no matter the outcome. Mr. Trump arrived with his wife, Melania, from his private club and residence, Mar-a-Lago. Pressed by reporters on whether he might concede if he loses, he said, quote, "If I lose an election, if it's a fair election, I'm going to be the first one to acknowledge it, and I think it's, well, so far, I think it's been fair." But he also raised concerns about voting machines and the length of time it takes to count ballots. Two things he made central to his lies about a stolen 2020 election. He has not explained what conditions he might require to deem an election fair, even as he has told supporters that he believes the only way Democrats can win is by cheating. Mr. Trump, who has at times criticized his advisors during rally speeches, said he was confident in his team and thought it had run his campaign well. Quote, "But in order to make that stick, you have to win," he said.
In state news, an amendment to New York's constitution that would bar discrimination based on things including gender identity and pregnancy outcomes is up for a final vote Tuesday amid debate over how much it might affect future abortion and transgender rights. Supporters and opponents disagree sharply about the potential legal impact of the Equal Rights Amendment, also known as Proposition 1. New York's Constitution currently forbids discrimination based on race, creed, or religion. The amendment would add language that says someone cannot be denied civil rights because of their national origin, age, disability, sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, pregnancy, pregnancy outcomes, or, quote, reproductive health care and autonomy, end quote. Democratic leaders put the amendment on the ballot party in hopes of boosting turnout by voters passionate about protecting abortion access in an election where U.S. House races in New York could help decide which party controls Congress.
In local news, Republican Representative Mark Molinaro and Democrat Josh Riley are vying to represent New York's 19th congressional district, which stretches from Tompkins County to the Hudson Valley in one of the most expensive and closely contested races in the country during this election cycle. Molinaro narrowly defeated Riley for his seat in 2022, triumphing by less than 2 points, or about 4,500 votes, despite the district's overwhelmingly electing President Joe Biden 2 years earlier. Molinaro's 2022 victory was the first time a Republican won the district since 2016. This time around, in what Politico called, quote, "New York's nastiest House race," unquote, the stakes are higher, with control of the U.S. House of Representatives potentially hanging in the balance. Molinaro's seat is among five districts in New York that Democrats are seeking to flip to reach a majority in the House. In the case of the Riley victory, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, a Democrat from New York, would be poised to become Speaker of the House in the year ahead. Jeffries would be the first black Speaker in U.S. history. Polling of the district, while sparse, has consistently shown the race is just as close as it was in 2022.
And finally, in world news, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel fired his defense minister, Yoav Gallant, on Tuesday after disagreements between the two men over the prosecution of the war in the Gaza Strip. Mr. Netanyahu's decisions to sideline Mr. Gallant, a powerful figure within his own party, Likud, is a dramatic step for the prime minister. But Mr. Gallant had increasingly been viewed as an internal opponent, and he has been a more moderate voice within the government on security issues. Mr. Netanyahu, who announced the decision in a video statement issued by his office, said, quote, significant gaps on handling the battle, unquote, emerged between him and Mr. Gallant. He named Israel Katz, the foreign minister, as the new defense minister, and said Gideon Sa'ar would replace Mr. Katz as foreign minister. Quote, at the height of a war, complete trust is needed between the prime minister and the defense minister, unquote, Mr. Netanyahu said in the video statement. Quote, in recent months, that trust between me and the defense minister was damaged, unquote. Minutes after Mr. Netanyahu released his statement, Mr. Gallant, 65, posted on social media that Israel's security, quote, was and will always remain my life's mission, unquote. He did not directly address his dismissal.
Also in world news, a week after flash floods hit eastern Spain, recriminations are flying over who is to blame for the country's worst natural disaster in living memory amid angry scenes on the part of those affected. An initial image of cross-party unity has been replaced by disputes over which institutions had jurisdiction in the disaster areas where at least 218 people lost their lives. In the immediate aftermath of the floods, Valencia regional leader Carlos Mazón of the Conservative People's Party welcomed Socialist Prime Minister Pedro Sánchez and thanked him for his government support. It was an unusual sight in the context of Spain's deeply polarized politics, with Mazón even calling Sánchez, quote, dear Prime Minister, end quote. Valencia's regional leader has faced criticism for taking around 12 hours to respond to a red weather warning by Spain's National Meteorological Office, quote, AMET, on October 29th, and issue an alert directly to people's phones, by which time the flood was already causing enormous damage. However, the national leader of the PP, Alberto Núñez Feijóo, questioned the information provided by the AMET, which is supervised by the central government. He also complained that the prime minister's administration had not coordinated with the regional government. And that is all for your Edge News Brief. When we come back, Decision 2024 continues with an interview with Megan Sperry on local government. Your Edge News time is 7:08.
When I smoke weed, I get lost in the music. I like to isolate each instrument. The rhythmic bass, the harmonies on the piano, the sticky melody.
Hey, careful, babe. There's someone crossing the street.
Sorry, I didn't see him there.
If you feel different, you drive different. Don't drive high. It's dangerous and illegal everywhere. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Hello, and welcome back to WFMP The Edge, Decision 2024. While America has its eyes turned on the presidential race, numerous local races, from municipal issues to the federal Senate, are being voted on right now. In tandem with this, we have seen local government, from the school board to the state house, playing a significantly larger portion on voters' minds. We now go to Marcel Pugliese with an interview with SUNY New Paltz professor and Ulster County legislator Megan Sperry.
First of all, just in case we need any introductions, hi, my name is Marcel Pugliese, and I'm here with Professor Megan Sperry of the Department of Digital Media and Journalism.
Hi, I'm Megan Sperry, Associate Professor of Digital Media Production at SUNY New Paltz and Ulster County Legislator, District 17.
So my first question for you is, would you like to describe your position as Ulster County Legislator?
Sure. My role as an elected official in the capacity of Ulster County Legislator means that I represent my district on all county matters, including budget items and policy issues or changes that would affect the county or my district specifically.
What kinds of legislation get passed at the county level?
So at the county level, a lot of the work that we do is around budget or municipal projects that we're supporting. A lot of stuff around, you know, sewer, water lines, bridge, you know, rebuilding, infrastructure projects, right? And then the other things that we do is we'll put policies into place that the can benefit the county or county residents. So there's a lot of stuff that we've been doing most recently around affordable housing, emergency shelter, and, you know, homelessness, as well as transportation. You know, we made UCAP free last session. So it's been free for over a year now, and we've seen an uptick in people using public transportation, which is great. Other stuff that we've been doing is around food security and food access, and we've been doing a lot of stuff around the opioid epidemic, and yeah, a lot of stuff like that.
And how is the average person affected by county legislation?
So the average person is impacted by county legislation through, you know, the budgets we have for different programs and services. You know, the average citizen probably drives in the county. So if we have county roads that have a lot of potholes or like issues, you know, we need to fix them. And that's a very straight line to be drawn between like what the county can do and how it impacts a local resident. Other services that we offer are, you know, health and wellness, or like I was saying before, we do a lot of stuff around housing and the housing crisis, and food security and food access. So it's, like, very simply, budget items that support county services and county issues, but then there's also ancillary services that we can support as well.
All right. What would you say the importance of interacting with politics at the municipal and county level is?
I always encourage folks to get involved with politics on a local level, because all politics are local. Like, somehow, you know, global and national politics will definitely trickle down to the town level or the county level. But also we've seen changes occur from the ground up as well. So, you know, people might feel overwhelmed by state politics or national politics, but a great way of getting involved is either through your town or your county. There's different groups, and there's different, the New Paltz Dems is a group that helps support Democratic issues and projects. That's a, you know, very small group. Town boards are really important. So there's a lot of different opportunities, and some of them are a heavier lift and some of them are more like, oh, can you just help us canvas and get signatures? And so whatever your availability is, there's definitely an option that you could tap into.
All right. New Yorkers this election cycle have the opportunity to interact directly with the state governmental process and decide if they want to amend the state constitution with Prop 1, which would expand the Equal Rights Amendment. Would you like to speak on this opportunity at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for New Yorkers. We're taking the initiative, the state is taking the initiative to codify Roe v. Wade as part of the state's constitution, which, you know, who would have ever thought that we would need to do this, but here we are. And New Yorkers have the ability to vote on it and to share their voice in codifying this really important opportunity and right, I think, more than an opportunity for women.
New Yorkers also have the opportunity to elect both their state senator and assembly member this cycle. Is it important that people pay attention to the politics of the New York State Legislature? And if so, why?
It's so important for people to pay attention to politics at all levels. I mean, we're sitting here in my office at SUNY New Paltz, right? And the budget for SUNY New Paltz is part of the SUNY overall umbrella budget. So who fights for us but our assembly person and our state representative to make sure that the state budget includes a good budget for SUNY, which in return, you know, gives us a better chance at offering the things that we need to offer and do the things that we want to do for our students. So, you know, beyond SUNY, there's a lot of things that happen on the state level that always come back to the local level. So having a relationship with your state representation is also very important.
New York, while a safe blue state on the presidential ballot, is comprised of many swing districts, with even the state house and governor's mansion being in Republican control in the recent past. What would you have to say on that? Do you think this shows how important the local governmental process is?
So I think people always think, oh, New York, it's a blue state. You know, why are we so worried about the election, national elections, state elections, whatever. But every place I've gone in New York State has been purple. I think that, people will look at New York City and they'll think, oh, New York City's blue. But there's definitely pockets of New York City that are purple or red. So we're not living in a time anymore where New York is blue. We're definitely living in a time, and it's not just this past presidential election cycle. It's been years that the Hudson Valley specifically has been purple. I think it was probably more red up until about 8-ish years ago, maybe 10 years ago, but there's been such an influx of folks moving up from the city that now we're seeing more progressive and liberal representation, which means that we're growing more purple. Right now we have two congressional races that are happening where we have, it could go either way. And so between Josh Riley and Mark Molinaro, that's like a little bit north of here. And then we have Pat Ryan running versus Esposito, and that's this area and south of here. And it's become like a very battleground area because outside interest groups are pouring their money into it because they know that those two seats could really change like the setup of Congress, right? And so strategically on a national level, special interest groups are looking at the different areas where it's very close, and they're thinking at the top of the ticket, okay, if Kamala wins, then we need to have a red, you know, Congress and a red representation, right? Because that's going to block anything that the Dems do, and vice versa, right? So there's a lot at stake, and I do think it's problematic that, you know, super PACs can get involved with these local, you know, air quotes, local elections, because they have so much money to like pour into ads and campaigns and flyers and all of that stuff.
We'll return after these. We'll be back with more of the interview with Megan Sperry. Your Edge News time is 7:20 p.m.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because feeling full can sound like this.
How did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
And like this.
Mom, I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project!
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations!
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Feed HV is a program administered by Hudson Valley Agribusiness Development Corporation, a nonprofit organization working throughout 7 counties in the Hudson Valley to rescue excess food. And this year alone, Feed HV has saved more than 65,000 pounds of food from generous donors for food assistance agencies that would have otherwise gone to waste. This year, Feed HV has had an increase in food donations and needs additional volunteer help. If you are interested in joining as a volunteer, donor, or recipient feeding agency, visit feedhv.org for details.
Brought to you by Feed HV and WFNP 88.7 Rosendale.
Welcome back. We now return to our interview with Megan Sperry, already in progress.
Do you find that the various levels of government influence each other from the bottom up? For example, have you found that a certain topic or legislation passed at the county level has affected on the state level? Or has a bill a town passed ever influenced the county's legislator decision?
For sure. I know that, for example, laws and rules around the bed tax. So the bed tax is something that anybody will pay when they stay in a hotel or a motel in a different area, wherever they're staying, right? So if I go to Poughkeepsie and I get a hotel, or if I go to Albany and get a hotel, each county has a different percentage for their bed tax. And then the bed taxes has become more of a conversation with the rise in popularity of Airbnb. And the reason for that is the funding or the taxes raised through hotel, motel, short-term rentals, that money goes back into the county. And then, like, our county decided that they wanted to raise the bed tax so that more money comes in. We can put that into our housing action fund, and then that's more money we have to help battle the housing crisis. Now, some people are against it because they think that a higher bed tax is going to deter people from staying in their county, which is not necessarily true. Most people stay in a place because it's close to the attraction or like the thing that they're doing. I've never met one person that has said to me, oh yeah, I decided not to go there because the bed tax was 1% more than the bed tax in the county that was like a 45-minute drive away. So the other part of that is if you have an Airbnb, you're supposed to register it with the county to be paying the correct amount of tax. And so the municipalities are in charge of making sure that known Airbnbs are registered with the county. So that's the municipal level. The county puts the bed tax in place. And then most recently on the state level, the governor had legislation and a resolution on her desk that she was looking to sign into that was around Airbnbs and short-term rentals as well. So it's like when we see that there's an issue in a certain area, you'll see how the different levels of government work together to try to address the issue and to try to help, you know, the citizens and the residents in that area.
All right. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. Is there anything else you want to add that you think is important about the upcoming election, whether it be like on the higher level or just any personal opinions that you think are important to include?
Yeah. I mean, I just always tell people to get involved on whatever level or layer that you're comfortable with, whether it's through volunteering with a local, you know, group or an organization or door knocking or writing postcards, you know, we need more volunteers at every level of government. We are in a volunteer crisis, and anybody that's has a little bit of time can be helpful. No amount of time or no amount of capacity is too little. So I always encourage people to vote in every election, not just the presidential elections. And I always encourage people to get involved.
All right. Thank you so much, Professor Sperry.
We would like to thank Megan Sperry for her time and thank Marcel Pugliese for the interview. One of the largest concerns cited in polling is the health and future of democracy. These concerns are shared on both sides of the aisle, with Republicans citing voting fraud as eroding democracy, and Democrats citing voter disenfranchisement as eroding democracy. We now go to Cyrus Mika with an interview with SUNY New Paltz political science professors Scott Minkoff and Daniel Lipson to talk about democratic institutions and the health of our democracy.
What would you say are the stakes for this election, and why is it important that people vote and engage in the democratic process?
Well, I think the stakes are quite high. We have two very different candidates, and in some ways I think the stakes are related to those candidates. In some ways, I think the stakes are unrelated to those candidates. I try to be as nonpartisan as I can, but I'm comfortable saying that one of the two candidates espouses things that are generally understood to be outside the norms of democracy. That would be Trump. Harris, whether you agree with her or not, does not seem to espouse anything resembling sort of anti-democratic norms or tendencies. So I do think there's a difference. I think the other sort of part of this is that coming out of an election, meaning 2020, when a lot of things sort of went awry, in particular the insurrection, and a lot of stuff about both from the Trump administration and from outside of the Trump administration, people describing the democratic process as corrupt or fake or whatever, when it's not, or wasn't, I suppose I should say, it's important to reinforce the democratic norms associated with democracy, mainly things like voting, but also in terms of accepting the winner, whoever that is, demonstrating some faith in the process as best as we can. So failure to sort of do that among anybody is sort of digs us deeper into a hole that, as a democracy, I find quite unhealthy. So I have concerns about one of the candidates and their democratic or anti-democratic tendencies, and I have concerns about how people are interacting with this sort of democratic process. We want people to engage. It's healthy.
that. So in the last election in 2020, we saw an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th and an attempt not to certify the election results. Do you think democracy can withstand another event such as January 6th? And how resilient do you think our democratic institutions are currently?
Okay, so I don't know whether we can withstand it or not. My gut is that we probably can, but every time something like this happens, it whittles away at sort of the foundational aspects of American democracy. So, it's not as if democracy just disappears one morning. It's not as if we wake up one morning and the United States isn't a democracy, right? It doesn't work that way. The way it happens slowly, and then it could possibly happen very quickly, but it's about things that play out over time. So I don't think we're likely to see the same kind of violent insurrection again, though we could experience some other things. And the question is, how did those things add up? Can we withstand them? I don't know. I think that it's much more about like this sort of like slow erosion of the things that are really important to democracy, including faith in the system. If people don't have faith in the system, whether that is whether that lack of faith comes from evidenced or non-evidenced things, it all sort of works against sort of, you know, how well things hold together.
Do you think changes are needed to ensure that an event like January 6th doesn't happen again, and how can we make our democracy?
We'll be right back with more of the interview with Scott Minkoff. Your Edge News time is 7:31 p.m.
Broadcasting live from the Student Union Building on the campus of SUNY New Orleans. The Edge, WFNP, Rosendale. Edge News, bringing you state, national, world, and local news, traffic, sports, weather, entertainment, and much more. This is News on the Edge.
We now return to our interview with Scott Minkoff, already in progress.
Six doesn't happen again, and how can we make our democracy stronger?
Okay, so there were... Okay. What happened on January 6th following the 2020 election, so I guess January 6th, 2021, was... event that could very well happen again, right? It could. I don't think it's likely, but I think it very well could. I don't think there are specific policies that really stop that. We have laws against doing that stuff, and those laws were true then, and they are true now.
Excuse me.
So those laws were true then, they're true now. I'm not sure that is what is at... That is not the concern. The concern is that too many people are unconvinced that the system is working the way they think it should be working. Some of that is good faith, by which I mean that is really what they believe. Some of that is, I think, not good faith. In other words, it's a preference for a candidate and a desire to see that candidate take power regardless. Both are bad. The kinds of things we need as a country are probably not the kinds of things that laws can fix. We need the right kinds of leaders. We need not just one of them, we need many of them. We need people that are willing to figure out ways to bridge gaps amongst groups that are having very difficult time talking to one another and have no interest in talking to one another. So we need that kind of healing, not the kind of fix that Congress can do or you know, or any... I mean, I suppose there is a president out there, a person out there, but I don't know who that person is. I wish I did, right? So we do need fixes, but they're not the kind of fixes that laws really work for. Now, with that said, there are certain laws we can have and constitutional provisions we can have that can help safeguard the system as is. We did see, for example, the Electoral Count Act get revised, which should be helpful. We could do more, probably, to alter the system to be more democratic and more representative. And that stuff may or may not help, right? I don't think that Harris Democrats or Harris supporters and Trump supporters are really fighting about, like, the Electoral College. I don't think they're fighting about how many members of the House of Representatives there are. I don't think they're fighting over whether, you know, small states should really should get the same number of senators as big states. They're fighting over much more deep-seated cultural ideas, right? And what you have to hope is that the system can withstand that division and over time heal that division. But I don't think, again, there's a set of laws that solves that division.
Would you say that recent trends to disparage the electoral system with the claims of massive voter fraud or electoral interference, are those new or have they been simmering for a while now?
Well, it depends what you mean by new. I suppose that... So this voter fraud stuff, I think, really started in 2016, right, with Trump's first serious run for the presidency when he won. And he won legitimately, which was always sort of the irony of the whole thing, right, a little bit. That's where this I think, the sort of modern version of this started. But, you know... So if we're thinking, if we're going back to 2016, it is now 2024, right? We're talking, you know, 8+ years now. That's a long time in political, in politics, I guess I would say, for something to sit and fester. There are now people who are first-time voters who see this, that sort of talking and discussion of sort of widespread voter fraud as the background of their entire sort of like, you know, politically aware lives, right? Whereas, I don't know, if you're just a little older than that, you know, that's not how we talked about the 2000 election, even with its complicated and contested Florida recount. That's not how we talked about, the 2004 election or the 2008 election. It's not how we talked about the elections before that in the 90s, 80s, right? So it's new, but it is now sort of widespread.
Is there anything else you would like to say either about like this election, about like the concept of democracy, or about like the U.S.'s democratic institutions as a whole?
I think that we're simultaneously putting both too much and too little on our elections. And I understand that's a bit of a contradiction. I'll try to work through it a little bit. We are all expressing, we meaning all Americans, seem to be so deeply invested in this presidential race and recent presidential races that it has reached a point of sort of like mental unhealth, right? That is not to say those concerns aren't entirely warranted, right? So we're putting a lot of attention on a thing that is very concerning. At the same time, that thing that is very concerning is, I think, harming our ability to see lots of different things in our democracy that may be working very well. You know, one thing one of the things that I study is federalism, which is the relationship that exists between states and the federal government, and for that matter, local governments and the states, and all of those sort of intergovernmental relations. Whether those relationships are working well is maybe not quite the question, but they are working. And we have 50 state governments. We also have the District of Columbia, right? We have these other governments. They matter. They will be absolutely essential for protecting democratic norms moving forward. They were essential during the first Trump administration, in my opinion. They are essential in another Trump administration, and for that matter, they are just as essential in a Harris administration. Not because I think Harris poses a threat to democratic principles, but because it is always incumbent upon states to sort of continue to be another layer of democratic accountability. So I guess my hope in the coming, you know, years and weeks, days, I don't know, is that states continue to or try to do that work as well. That means doing the work of local democracy in your towns and villages, in your cities. It means doing the work of democracy at the states. And it means not as important as the presidential election is, and as concerned as I am about this presidential election, it also means not losing sight of the other sort of democratic institutions we have in society, and continuing to do the work of bolstering those. Now, could a undemocratic president or an autocratic president make it a lot harder for that stuff to function? Yes, I think so. But I think one of the values of American democracy is that it is so large, it is so big, it is so many people, it is so many governments, that there are lots and lots of institutions and people to sort of build upon and to protect. So hopefully that's how this sort of evolves over the coming, you know, I hope that evolves regardless of who's president, or continues to evolve regardless of who's president.
Dr. Scott Minkoff, professor of political science here at SUNY New Paltz, thank you for your time.
Sure.
We now turn to the same interview with Daniel Lipson. I'm sorry about that. There's a slight miscommunication. We're now going to go to some PSAs. This is in 2024. We'll turn after these brief messages. Your Edge News time is 7:42 p.m.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
We now return with Cyrus Micah with Daniel, SUNY New Paltz political science professor Daniel Lipson.
What would you say are the stakes in this election, and why is it important that people vote and engage in the democratic process?
The stakes are enormously high, and not only the results of the Electoral College, but also the closely contested House and Senate races. So really, three out of the four institutions are up for grabs, and the the 6-3 the supermajority of hard conservatives on the Supreme Court is a major player in both in the present and the future. The reason why it's especially or just far more important for this election than in every past election that I've been alive for is that if Donald Trump returns to the White House with a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a 6-3 hard conservative majority on the Supreme Court, then there will be, on some issues, some of the time, a couple or a few Republicans in the House or a couple or a few senators on the Republican side to be the guardrails that slow down the promises that we're hearing from a party that has been taken over by Trumpism. And the experts on how democracies die have been sounding the alarm this entire century about threats to democracy, and this one is the real one. This one is the real. This isn't a fire drill. This one is the real full on alarm. And it doesn't mean, again, that everything that Team Trump says they will do, they will be able to do. But again, if they win, if the party of Trump wins all three, what I call the royal flush, then there will be very little to stop the agenda and some of the specific policies to keep in mind. There's, on the one hand, there's just the slide into fascism or authoritarianism, or call it whatever label you want, but just full-on efforts to lock up anybody within the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or otherwise who has in any way not enabled the propaganda of this extreme right faction that's taken over one of the two parties. So this moment in history is that what we need right now desperately at this moment in history are visionary leaders who can refocus the American attention on absolutely crucial threats facing not only our own country's democracy, but facing humanity's ability to continue to exist, like the climate crisis. And so having a party that is full-on in climate denial, that's behind the scenes, one of its main agendas is to smash government environmental laws, along with civil rights and social programs and so much more. But it's just sending the country in exactly the wrong direction. And it's a party that's really not in any way about solving problems. It's a party that's become, as it's been taken over by Trumpism, is a party that's just about pushing people's buttons on their nervous systems to make them scared and angry, to have them get some kind of release in their nervous system about giving the green light to a person and a party that just want to blow things up. And the last thing we need right now is to blow up our country into scapegoating and dismantling some of what visionaries have worked so hard for the last 100-plus 150 years to stabilize in order to have a functional government to address growing crises.
In the last presidential election in 2020, we saw an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th in an attempt not to certify the election results. Do you think democracy can withstand another event such as January 6th? And how resilient do you think our democratic institutions are currently?
There's sort of some reasons for optimism, and there's some reasons for real concern, and they just battle against each other. Some of the reasons for optimism are that, one, the White House is not under the control of the candidate doing the insurrection to try to stay in power. The White House is under control of a responsible and serious person and surrounding team. Although a lot of the surrounding team around Trump were trying to talk his daughter, his I believe even his junior son, his some of his closest advisors were trying, and clearly his vice president were trying to talk him down. That certainly helps, having having the president be able to quickly call in the military, quickly call in the National Guard, have the Capitol Police prepared. There, some of that won't catch by surprise, and those institutions won't be undermined by the very insurrectionist himself in power. Some of the concerns are, though, that the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, is not only a election denier, he was one of the inner circle lawyer politicians who were the architects of the election denial legal strategy. And so if enough House members can go along with Mike Johnson, which is quite plausible, there could be an effort to refute to block certification of some of the electoral college states that have close victories if Kamala were ahead, to thereby block Kamala from getting the 270 electoral votes needed to outright win the electoral college, which would then throw the election into the House, which would then give each state delegation in the House one vote, and there are more states with majority of Republican House delegations, and so that I think is part of that strategy. But because of the insurrection and Democrats narrowly and heroically winning control of the Senate, and already having the House in 2021, Congress did pass a Electoral College, Electoral Reform Protection Act that does prevent some of the theft of Electoral College results. So the party of Trump side, there will be even more brazen efforts, not only on the House side. Any efforts on the Senate side would simply just be Republican senators trying to cast votes to deny certification, but they didn't in 2020 have the president of the Senate, Mike Pence, on their side, but certainly not for lack of trying. That's what the insurrection was about. The deeper concerns are that the party of Trump is so, the takeover of the Republican Party to become the party of Trump is so complete that now a much larger percentage of election officials in municipalities, counties, and states that are Republican controlled are housed by election deniers who will be in on the efforts that are very coordinated and very radical to refuse to certify local, county, and state efforts. But again, in a lot of the states and with some federal law that has been affirmed by the conservative Supreme Court thus far, a lot of the experts I read, including an article just in the last day or two in the New York Times, have indicated that a lot of the experts think it would be harder to peacefully steal the election.
Yes, Ace. We now are going to take a quick break. Your Edge News time is 7:53 p.m.
At Inform Your Community, we combine topics that people want more information about with fun events like crafting, movies, and games, which cover information on a range of topics that impact what happens in the United States. Now we're taking our nonpartisan virtual events and launching in-person chapters around the country. Get informed and have fun while you're at it. Let's grow together. Sponsored by Inform Your Community, a nonpartisan nonprofit. Come visit us at informyourcommunity.org.
Get hurt in the game? We tough it out. Feel exhausted? we push on. Feeling down? We pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. But there are times when bootstraps aren't enough. When stress gets to us and we need to talk to someone about what we're really going through. So we're going to reach out, because sometimes mental health is not a one-person job. Visit loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
We now return to our interview with Daniel Lipson, already in progress.
Would you say that the recent trends to disparage both the electoral system with claims of massive voter fraud or election interference are new, or have they been simmering for a while now?
One part of this movement, the voter suppression, has existed since the beginning, the founding of our Constitution. That's the architects of our Constitution at their core rejected our first system of government because it put the voters who granted were only white, almost only white, were entirely male, and had to have at least some property. But still, they were, the majority of those people were farmers. It was kind of more of a, you know, a low education, populist majority, and that terrified the Federalist supporters of the Constitution. And so when they designed our Constitution, it was, they deliberately designed the present president to be unelected by the people because they distrusted the policy stances that the farmer majority wanted, which wasn't friendly to their ideology of laissez-faire capitalism. And so the voter suppression has, I wouldn't say it's gone right from the start of our independence, except, of course, the suppression of this voting suppression and human rights, complete violation of African Americans and the voting suppression of women. But our first founding, we were a more popular democratic model within the confines of patriarchy and white supremacy. So the Constitution was the first voter suppression of the masses. But after slavery, some of the southern states began passing laws banning ex-felons from not only being able to vote while they were felons, but for the rest of their life being banned from voting. And that was a white supremacist effort to limit black Americans, only men, of course, at the time, from voting. And some of the recent measures this century are just simply reenacting a lot of those white supremacist voter suppression measures, but for partisan advantage rather than simply for white supremacist advantage. So, and then others are just kind of new to the playbook, but a lot of it is just rehashing a lot of old voter suppression measures.
Is there anything else you would like to say about this election or democracy or democratic institution as a whole?
We're living in some really weird split screens where the people who are in the know see what is going down, what is happening, what the stakes are, and then so many voters are living in a bubble of propaganda and really, really shockingly low information. And the solution to me is not, therefore, to suppress the rights of them to have the right to vote. It's to really prioritize upping our civic education, but that requires getting people dedicated to civic education into the White House, into state legislatures, into state governorships, and passing laws that up the level of civic education, because none of this could be happening if such a large percentage of our populace was not being failed at what they're learning in K-12 and college about basic 101 politics, economics, public policy, democracy, just basic foundations to prevent your country from being hijacked by the most dangerous forces who will drag it down to places where will be written about in history books for centuries in the future as a tragedy, if humanity's still alive in centuries.
Dr. Daniel Lipson, Professor of Political Science here at SUNY New Paltz, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
We would like to thank Scott Minkoff and Daniel Lipson for sitting down with us for the interview, and thank you to Cyrus Mika. And that'll be it from us for the night. On the Edge News staff are our directors, Alyssa Rodan and Patrick Kelly. Tonight's engineer has been Ashley Griffin. Our sources to the Edge News brief have been provided by The New York Times, The Gothamist, The Times Union, The Daily Freeman, The BBC, CNN, and The New Paltz Oracle. I'll be back throughout the night to deliver you more breaking news and live election updates. Stay tuned for more cutting edge music. From the entire Edge News team, have a beautiful night.
I will have to start getting my fashion. I will have to start getting my fashion advice from somewhere else other than the website of a mid-tier suburban Boston classic alt-rock radio station. It's all on you now, SUNY New Paltz, WFNP 88.7, The Edge. Don't let me down.
We won't let you down, Mr. Colbert, because SUNY New Paltz is the best-dressed college campus, and we have an awesome radio station, WFMP The Edge, Rosendale, 88.7 FM.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Keyes, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
and we know we must build up a trust. And we want the power for the people. That's all we ask in our country, dear. The sick and the hungry, unable. Protect them and those who may live in fear. Is a part of the times, but it's rough for some people to leave. Disease moving fast, but it don't have to last. It is now the nation's turn for all to be concerned. We can be free as still. It is the people's will. We want power for the people. That's all we ask in our country, dear. Sick and the hungry, unable. Protect them and those who may live in fear.
That was Power to the People by Curtis Mayfield. My name is DJ Finneroo, and this is The Fairy Ring. Before that, you heard Gil Scott Aaron with The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. This is the biggest night of the year. If you haven't gotten out to vote yet, we have about 53 minutes until all voting sites close at 9 p.m. So if you haven't voted yet, please go do your civic duty and vote. So we're just going to sit back, relax, try to get away from the chaos of it all with some Pink Floyd and The Clash up next, only on WFNP Rosendale.
No dark sarcasm in the classroom. This is a public service announcement with guitar.
Feed HV is a program administered by Hudson Valley Agribusiness Development Corporation, a nonprofit organization working throughout 7 counties in the Hudson Valley to rescue excess food. In this year alone, Feed HV has saved more than 65,000 pounds of food from generous donors for food assistance agencies that would have otherwise gone to waste. This year, Feed HV has had an increase in food donations and needs additional volunteer help. If you are interested in joining as a volunteer, donor, or recipient feeding agency, visit feedhv.org for details.
Brought to you by Feed HV and WFNP 88.7 Rosendale.
Babes, what are you doing?
What? I'm just mowing the lawn.
No, it's blazing hot and dry out here. Don't you remember? Smokey Bear says,
avoid using power equipment when it's windy or dry.
Where'd you learn this?
Oh, it's on
SmokeyBear.com with many other wildfire prevention tips.
Right. Thanks, Honey Bear.
Because remember, only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
That was Bruce Springsteen with Born in the USA. And we're going to continue with Springsteen with Thunder Road and the Promised Land only on WFNP.org or 88.7 FM, The Edge.
Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me and I want you only. Don't turn me home again, I just can't face myself alone again. Don't run back inside, darling, you know just what I'm here for. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore. Show a little faith, there's magic in the night. You ain't a beauty, but hey, you're alright. Oh, and that's alright.
That was Bruce Springsteen with The Promised Land. And before that was Thunder Road by, of course, The Boss again. If you're just tuning in, hi. How are we doing? everything is going to work out. It's going to be okay. Up next, we got some Lana Del Rey for my girl Sam, if you're listening. I appreciate you and love you so much. Up next, we got American by Lana Del Rey, only on WFNP Rosendale.
Playhouse, put my favorite record on. Get down, get your crystal method on. You're like Tartan, driving around the city, flirting with the girls like you're so pretty. Springsteen is the king, don't you think? I was like, hell yeah, that guy can sing. Like, ooh, 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 ooh. You made me crazy, you made me wild. Just like a baby, spin me around like a child. Your skin so cold and brown. Be young, be dull, be proud. Like an American. Drive fast, I can almost taste it now. LA, I don't even have to fake it now. You were like so sick, everybody said it. You're way ahead of the trend, get it. Elvis is the best, hell yes. Honey, put on that party dress. Like ooh, ooh, ooh.
West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains.
Of living is gone. Oh yeah, of living is gone. Oh yeah, they say life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. A little ditty about Jack and Diane, two American kids doing best they can.
That was John Mellencamp with Jack and Diane. Before that was John Denver with Country Roads Take Me Home. Up next, we got a three-peat with the one, the only, Tom Petty. Only on WFNP Rosendale.
Whoa.
pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground and I won't.
Working on a mystery, I'm going wherever.
You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Bye.
it's not true. One did a woman never bargained for you. Lots of people talk.